First up is a man who joins us from Basel, of all places. Yes, he's covering them against Schalke tonight, but it's a little out of his comfort zone because he's a man who normally knows all things about French football, and that's where we're going with him today. He is, of course, freelance football commentator, the one, the only, Mr. Ian Holyman, joining us here on the show today. Ian, it's a pleasure to have you on the show, mate. It's been far too long since we had you on World Football Daily. How are you doing?
It has been quite a while. Yes, it has. I'm very good, thanks.
There's been plenty of change in French football since we last had you on. What have you made, and have you been slightly taken aback about how well Monaco have started to this top flight season? You can talk about the money and the players they've brought in, but it takes a long time, a lot of the time, to get these sorts of sides with lots of money to gel, and it's happened very quickly.
I think that's absolutely the fundamental point, and it's something that surprised a number of people. I think even Mathieu Valbuena, it was the Marseille midfielder, came out and said, you know, after Monaco had beaten Marseille and come from behind to beat Marseille in Marseille earlier in the season, he was surprised by how well how much of a cohesive unit that Claudio Ranieri's managed to put together already. And I think in the games that I've seen them, that's certainly something that has come to the fore. But I mean, as you say, there's a lot of money being spent, but it's not just about spending the money, it's about spending the money wisely. And if you look at the players that they've bought, I mean, everybody talks about Falcao and his goals, but I think what really shines through is his work rate. You know, he's really committed to the team. This is not a star in the prima donna kind of sense. This is a star very much because of his prolific goal scoring ability. But the guy really rolls up his sleeves and gets stuck in for the team. I think that's an attitude that you've seen as well from João Moutinho, who was injured earlier in the season. You've got Jeremy Toulalon, who's coming back into France with really something to prove, try and get himself back into the national side. But there's never been a question really about his attitude, despite his involvement in that rather infamous strike in South Africa a couple of years ago. And then you've got Ricardo Carvalho and Eric Abidal at the back. I mean, you know, could you ask for two better leaders in a side? I think Monaco have done exceptionally well in the transfer market, very wisely brought in players like that. And Ranieri has, because of players like that and their experience, he's been able to blood some very promising youngsters in his side as well. It's a very, very promising and excellent mix.
What about Ranieri and his experience with Chelsea, being at a club with so much money, and it didn't work too well for him and ended up losing him his job, of course? Do you think he's learned from that and that's influenced the purchases that he's made in this Monaco side and influenced the way he's got this group to gel as well?
I'm not sure how much of an influence the Chelsea situation had on him. Of course, he's got huge amounts of experience in Serie A as well. I mean, and in Spain. I mean, people make a lot of the fact that he's never won a title, but he's come very close on a number of occasions. I think the important thing with Monaco is that he joined the club. He didn't just join them this summer. You know, he joined them when they were in the second division. So he's had a chance to get to know the players, even though he hasn't kept a lot of the players who got promotion. He's kept some of them, and he's certainly been given the opportunity to have a good look at the youngsters who he's been able to bring into the side this season, or been able to use, rather, I should say, in the side this season. So I think the real key for Ranieri and the success at Monaco is that he's been able to build the team himself, or, you know, in France, as in many European countries outside of England, it's sporting directors and presidents who very generally decide who is going to be bought. How much input Ranieri's had in that, I'm not quite sure. I would suggest it's been rather significant. Aside from that, I think it's just the time that he's had and the ability to actually shape the team and shape the club and their sort of vision of things that's really been helpful for him.
Just finally in on Monaco before we move away slightly to elsewhere in France, of course. Obviously, Falcao, as you mentioned, the work rate, the 7 goals in the league as well this season, obviously fantastic. But is it pleasing as well to see that he's not the only goal scorer in this side at the moment? He's not being relied on. You've got Ribéry, who's added 6 himself. And it's a side that, do you feel that without Falcao, they could still be in and around that area with PSG?
That would be a huge ask, you have to say. I mean, Falcao, what a quality player, he's proven it at Porto, Atletico Madrid. Now he's proven it again at Monaco. I'm not sure that without Falcao, you're going to see Emmanuel Riviere score so many goals. I mean, there's no doubt that Riviere's got a certain degree of potential. I mean, he's by no means in the Falcao class, but Riviere himself has said many a time already this season that the fact he's playing alongside Falcao just simply gives him more space, because defenders are just drawn to Falcao. And if they're marking Falcao, obviously they can't be marking Riviere at the same time, and that's given him opportunities. There's no doubt that he himself is starting to exploit his talent. He's had a lot of injury problems, notably, which really hampered him at Toulouse. And I think it was probably a good move on his part to drop down to League Two last January and just get a few games under his belt, get a little bit of confidence going. But, I mean, you said that they're not really Falcao dependent. Falcao, 7 goals. Riviere, 6 goals. The only other man who's found the net is Jean Moutinho. So, you know, they are rather over-reliant at the minute on their strikers, but that's the way they play. They like to get down the flanks. The fullbacks get forward as well. You've got Lucas Ocampos, very promising young Argentine attacking midfielder, on one flank. Yannick Ferreira Carrasco, who's an excellent young Belgian, on the other flank. And they're just slinging crosses towards Falcao and Riviere, and they're really the focal point of the attack. So that perhaps explains why so many goals have been scored by the two strikers. But I mean, certainly if there were to be a relatively middle to long-term injury for Falcao, then this is not the same Monaco side.
Elsewhere further down the table, Ian, you've got Lyon, who have started brightly, of course, and then really struggled in the last maybe 4 or 5 weeks of the season or so. Lyon's always one where we're not really sure how they're going to start a season and how they're going to finish, but have you rated their start so far to this year?
It's extremely up and down, isn't it? I mean, they started, I think, with 4 straight wins and didn't concede a goal, and then came the real slap in the face when they played Real Sociedad in the Champions League playoff. They got beaten 2-0 in both legs of that one, and I mean, it was a tough draw. Even on paper before they started, but they were pretty much outclassed in both legs. And the thing is with Lyon that they're really trying to build in a different way as to what they've done, or as to what they did when they won those 7 consecutive League One titles. Pretty much back then they followed the Bayern Munich model of basically buying up all the best domestic talent in France, the likes of Florent Malouda, Abidal himself, Mikael Essien as well, were all poached from lesser League One clubs. Now they don't really have the money, since they bought Johan Gorkuf in 2010 for some 22 million and decided crazily to pay him something like 6 million a year, which is a huge salary in France. He's the highest paid Frenchman, and that sort of ranks up there with the sort of Paris Saint-Germain squad. They've really had to tighten their belts, and certainly this season, and that's why you saw the problems with Bafétimbi Gomis, who was last season's leading scorer, and Jimmy Brion over the summer. Lyon desperately trying to offload them, and in the end having to settle for selling Lisandro Lopez and the likes of Michel Bastos as well. They're really trying to rely on their youth academy, which has produced some very good players. Of that, there's no doubt. I mean, Karim Benzema, Hatem Ben Arfa, just to name a couple of the recent past. In the present, there's Maxime Gonalon, Clément Grenier as well, who's really coming to the fore. It looks like he's going to be an excellent player for France and for his club, perhaps not always Lyon, in years to come. There are a number of other youngsters coming through, but when you've got that many youngsters in the side and in the squad, you don't have too many experienced heads, such as Steve Malbronk, for example, then you are going to get patches where the form goes right off, the confidence takes a real blow, and it's going to take a little bit for Remy Gard to turn around. I don't see them finishing in the top three this season.
You mentioned, obviously, the youth academy there at Lyon. It has produced a number of quality players. There are academies that get lauded around the world. Porto, for instance. I remember having a chat with somebody this season about how Porto is considered one of the best youth academies in the world, in world football. Obviously, Manchester United are mentioned a lot as well. Where does this Lyon youth academy kind of match up in terms of being kind of a great youth academy for world football in general? And why is it so good at producing talent in France?
That's an excellent question. I mean, if you look at the youth academy set up in France in the sort of 1990s, the first part of the millennium, it was really the envy of the world. I mean, Karl-Heinz Rummenigge just yesterday was on French radio saying that Germany and we know how much young talent they've got, learned a lot from France. They really copied the style of these youth academies, where the kids are, they're not only taught technique, but they still go to school. They're very well sort of surrounded by people who have their best interests at heart, really trying to develop them as men as well as footballers. I think so, a number of clubs, for example, Paris Saint-Germain, their youth academies is pretty poor. It's something that the Qatari owners are trying to work on. But you know, if you think about the people who've come through there, just maybe Mamadou Sakho stands out really as the prime example. But there's so few. They don't really focus on that. I mean, they've got the money to be able to afford not to for the moment. Lyon, as I said, have to now get back to the youth academy, having, you know, pretty much ruled the roost for the first decade of the millennium. In terms of world football, it's pretty difficult to place them. But certainly in France right now, they're doing things perhaps not quite the best in League One, but they're certainly right up there.
Let's talk about a bit of the Champions League now, Ian. Now, I know you said you're covering Basel against Schalke tonight, but we will sidestep that for the moment and look at the big game for Marseille against Borussia Dortmund. The group of death, this group has been called, obviously, with Arsenal and Napoli as well. How important is it, obviously with a rough start, but how important is it for Marseille to be bold in these away fixtures? Because it seems like in these groups of death, it's actually getting points on the road that are going to be the vital part of getting through this group.
Well, it's interesting you should say that, because Elie Boppe, the Marseille coach, said pretty much the same thing yesterday in his pre-match press conference. He said, we're going to go out there, we're going to go at them, and we're going to try and play our football. He said, yes, we are undoubtedly going to have to defend for spells, given the quality that's in that Dortmund side. But let's not forget the last time that Marseille were in the Signal Iduna Park, they won 3-2 to progress to the knockout stages with Arsenal, who were again in the group stage with them. It's true that perhaps Dortmund in the last couple of years have stepped up more than a couple of gears, and of course with that tremendous home support and the extra Champions League experience that they've garnered in the last couple of seasons, they are a different proposition. But Marseille, I saw them play at the weekend against Lorient. They weren't particularly special, but I think in the likes of Andre Ayew, Mathieu Valbuena and Dimitri Payet, they've got an excellent attacking trio behind the central striker. Perhaps they're going to be missing André-Pierre Gignac tonight. That's a huge miss. Look out too for their new defensive midfielder, Gianelli Imbula, who is absolutely superb. League Two player of the season last year, bought for Gangon for something like 7.5 million. Few eyebrows raised. He's only in his early 20s, but he is sensational. Excellent player, excellent distribution, reads the game absolutely superbly. And they're going to give Dortmund a real run for their money this evening.
We've mentioned, obviously, last season, the small squad that Marseille had, and really it's not been built on exponentially. You know, it's not still a massive squad reaped with depth. But for the Champions League games, we expect to see Marseille obviously raising their game a lot on these big European nights. Do you think over the long period of the season it is going to have an impact on their league form, and it is going to be very detrimental to them in Liga?
If they manage to get out of the group, yes. But I mean, that is a huge
I'm being optimistic for them, Ian. Everybody's got a chance, surely.
they certainly do. But I mean, you've got a fancy Arsenal. You've got to fancy Arsenal and Borussia Dortmund from that group to go through to the knockout stages. I don't think Marseille would welcome a Europa League challenge. I think there's no doubt that last season, when they got knocked out of the Europa League in the group stages, there weren't too many tears shed at the Stade Velodrome, and I think that it was a major factor in them coming through nicely in the second part of the season to finish second to Paris Saint-Germain, which was really the new League One title, if you like, because Paris Saint-Germain, just with the means at their disposal, are just or were last season just too good for everybody else. But yeah, I mean, Marseille, it's a fantastic club. If they do get through, I mean, the that group, then okay, I still can't see them going very far, and I think that the it's a good point that you make about the strength and depth in their squad, but I don't think it's going to be a problem simply because they're not going to have that problem.
Very quickly, Ian, because we've taken up far too much of your time, but we can't not talk French football without talking PSG at the moment. It is obviously the dominant force in Ligue 1 just about at the moment. They take on Benfica tomorrow night. The toughest game, of course, really, in their group, arguably, aside from maybe travelling to Olympiacos. But will PSG be looking to kind of go through this group in kind of third gear, or will they want to really show everybody that, yeah, okay, we've got an easier group, but we're going to take this as seriously as anybody and make sure there are no slip-ups?
Well, I think last season, if you saw them under Carlo Ancelotti in the Champions League, they were very different to the side that were in League One. And I think we saw that in the first game in at Olympiacos. They came through and won 4-1 in the end. Not particularly impressive, but they've been absolutely appalling, quite frankly, in League One so far this season. They've only produced one decent performance of note. That was away at Bordeaux when they won 2-0. But Bordeaux are languishing near the relegation zone. And that, you can't read too much into that. I was unfortunate enough to be at the Parc des Princes on Saturday when they beat Toulouse. Really, it is very, very workmanlike from Paris Saint-Germain right now. It's reminiscent of Carlo Ancelotti at the start of last season. They're winning games, but it's by far from impressive. And the game prior to the Toulouse game was against Valenciennes, who are currently bottom of the table. The PSG were fortunate to come away with a win and would have even been fortunate to come away with a point from that game. So poor was their display. But as I say, I think, and it's been mentioned before by the likes of Javier Pastore, that these sort of players, they find it difficult to get themselves motivated for League One games. It's simply, the games are simply not big enough for them. That's certainly not the case in the Champions League. So I think that we will see a different face from PSG when they step out against Benfica.
It will be an interesting tie, and everything around PSG is so interesting at the moment. I just can't believe I've heard somebody say I was unfortunate enough to be watching PSG at the Parc des Princes. I never thought I'd hear somebody say that. Ian, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on the show today, mate, and it's always a pleasure to catch up with you on all things French football and your good self in general. Enjoy the football tonight, mate, and we look forward to speaking with you again very soon indeed.
Pleasure.
Cheers, Ian. Thank you. Cheers, Ian. Ian Holyman there joining us here on World Football Daily, talking all things French football. Now, you may think, because obviously we normally have one guest on the show, that is it. And joining me next will be Mr. Rafa Gonzalez. But no, there is more. Oh, yes, there is more. Of course, what would a week be without a little trip down to the Bundesliga and to talk a little bit of German football? And of course, Dortmund's hopes tonight in the Champions League is a man who we love having on the show. He's our very own German football expert. It's Mr. Kit Holden, everybody. Kit, how are we today, mate? I hear you are actually in the Vaterland itself. How are you doing in Germany? Whereabouts are you?
I am in Berlin at the moment, mate. I'm just coming out of the office. I'm doing a year on the newspaper here. So, yeah, authentically in the mix, as it were. So.
We would expect nothing less from you, my friend. Nothing less at all. Big night for German football. But let's just go back to the weekend first. Bayern Munich against Wolfsburg, a 1-0 victory. This time last year, we would have expected Bayern to storm 90% of the games that we've seen. It's not been the same in the last few weeks. Despite the victories, is there still unrest around the Bayern camp?
There's a lot of unrest. I mean, I don't think it's particularly justified. I think, when Guardiola came in, there were a lot of people who made, quite a lot of big predictions and thought Bayern would be completely unbeatable from the word go, and it clearly wasn't going to be the case. Any trainer who comes in to that kind of team that's experienced so much and is so set in their ways and then tries to change even the smallest things is obviously going to have problems, and that doesn't necessarily mean he's doing the wrong thing, but it just means they're going to take time to adjust to the system. And the fact that they're taking time isn't a surprise. The fact that they're doing it and winning games, albeit not as convincingly as perhaps we'd expect from the squad, isn't, a tragedy. It's not a crisis for Bayern. Matthias Sammer came out a few weeks ago after the Hannover game and had a right rant about Bayern's attitude and how they were hiding behind Guardiola, and that's caused a hell of a lot of issues around the camp. Lahm's just come out today and criticised Sammer for it after it all died down. So there is a lot of unrest, but I think largely it's unjustified because at the end of the day, yeah, there have been some scrappy 1-0s. They haven't been pouring in goals left, right and centre, but they've also beaten Schalke 4-0. They've also beaten Hannover 4-1 in the Cup. been convincing in the Champions League game so far. It's, you know, it's not a bad start to the season by any stretch of the imagination.
Unlike, it's of course exactly like Dortmund, who've had a fantastic start to the season as well. They picked up 5 goals on the weekend, and they're looking very much like a team that's going to be hard to slow down. What's changed from this year compared to last year in the league?
I think generally they've put more focus on the league this year. I think last year they didn't have a very good start, and they had a good start in the Champions League, and then slowly, kind of organically, it developed that the Champions League became a priority as Bayern pulled further and further away. And Bayern have been the first team to drop points this year, and Dortmund have pounced on that, although they've dropped points since. They're kind of bored, I think, by that, and they're keen to reestablish themselves in the league and show Bayern that they're not actually very far behind them at all. I think also, you know, players like Mkhitaryan and Aubameyang coming in and wanting to prove themselves, and they've done that very well, and they've started brilliantly, and that gives the whole team a bit of a lift and a boost. And also, you know, opponents don't know how to play against them. I mean, they're playing against Skitzer or Lewandowski or those guys, however good they are, and they know them inside out, and they've played against them a few times. It's often you can be a bit stale at the start of the season when you kind of coming back and you haven't played for a few months, but when it's a completely new player, particularly someone like Aubameyang with all that pace, it's, you know, sometimes a bit of a surprise for opponents. And yeah, they just got a bit of a sort of confidence boost at the moment. But again, I don't think we should get too carried away. I mean, they're not, you know, haven't been super start to the season. It's been a very good start to the season, just like Bayern. And obviously, they're scoring more goals and the performances look more convincing. But it's still early days yet, so we'll see.
Oh, Kate, you're not letting yourself get carried away with this then. Oh, you're keeping level-headed, man. That's fair play to you. We've been at... Well, I've been cooing about Romelu Lukaku in the Premier League for the last few months or so now. I was just wondering, in your opinion, who's that similar in the Bundesliga kind of player that is maybe being unrecognised only until now for their talents at the moment in the Bundesliga?
Question to throw into the mix. I mean, one that springs to mind, not so much in that respect, but certainly in the respect that they're gaining this season and have come up quite surprisingly this season, is Rafinha. Bayern, because obviously he's been on the bench for Bayern for his career there, part of the first 6 months, and he's been very much a reserve player, a squad player. And Guardiola, having moved Lahm into the defensive field, has to put him right back, and he said himself he's been surprised how good he is. And Rafinha, who many really traditionally is a bit of a journeyman and certainly a squad player for big clubs, has come into his own and had a really, really good start to the season. So, yeah, perhaps not an unsung hero as of yet, because, again, it's early days, but certainly someone who's surprised in the first few games.
Another player who's obviously caught the attention of people through his goal-scoring form at the moment has been the early start of Stuttgart's Vedad Ebisevic. Obviously, this is a player who's obviously got goals in him. He's scored, you know, 15 goals last season, grabbed a decent amount at Hoffenheim during his time. But this is a pretty exceptional start, even by his standards, 6 goals in the first 7 games.
Sorry, I missed a fair chunk of that.
I was just wondering what you made of Ibisevic's impressive start, 6 goals in the first 7 games. Can it continue?
Yeah, I think it can. I think Stuttgart in general have almost at times needed someone like that to really pull them up, because it hasn't been a good start for them, and there's been a lot of trouble around the club with Labbadia and him leaving and Schneider coming in. And, you know, I think a player like that who can be consistent is obviously going to be a massive boost for a club like that. And, yeah, I think, you know, he is obviously a very, very strong player. I think he should have got better than he did Hoffenheim. I can certainly see that creating up.
A Stuttgart side that can step into, if Schalke continue their poor league form, step into maybe that fourth place role, because it is quite open for that fourth Champions League spot. I know it's early days, of course, but if Schalke can't recover from this poor start.
So the fourth Champions League spot, I always think, is a lot more open than people give it credit for in the Bundesliga. I mean, you know, Schalke didn't walked to it last season, and you know, they were within a couple of games of losing out. We're quite lucky that the teams around them perhaps didn't have the maturity to really push through to the end of the season. And yeah, I think Schalke, generally Schalke seems to lack a certain kind of philosophy, a certain unity in the way they go about the season. I don't know if that's the Taylor's fault or if it's, you know, something more structural or to do with the squad, but certainly there doesn't seem to be a kind of the sense of unity that you get the other big clubs. Even at Leverkusen, obviously at Bayern, Dortmund, and some of the clubs like Mainz and Hannover, that you can sense a real kind of squad mentality, a real kind of togetherness where they drive through, and that's how clubs do well in the Bundesliga, regardless of the quality they have. And Schalke don't tend to have that, and obviously it hasn't helped them. It's had, you know, players coming in and out over the last few years. But I think, yeah, it's certainly going to be an uphill struggle for them. That said, it is, as I say, a very, very open league, and you know, they've started season started before and come back up. They started last season with a bang and then plummeted, and have to fight their way back up. So, you know, with Schalke, I don't think you can ever really tell, which is part of the excitement.
What about Schalke's chances against Basel tonight? And what was the reaction from the Schalke camp to the Basel win against Chelsea? Did that give them a big boost after the last round of the Champions League games?
I don't think that result gave them a particular boost. I mean, I think they're wary of Basel on the back of that result. Jens Keller was talking this week about how quickly Basel can change their game, how dangerous they can be, and how flexible they are tactically. And I think there's a lot of respect for a team like Basel, which not just against Chelsea, but against United and another big opponent in the big final in the first leg a couple of years ago as well. Albeit got thrashed in the second leg. But yeah, they've shown their quality, and Schalke have a lot of respect for Basel. But at the same time, I think they see this as a chance to kind of atone for that league form. And you know, because I mean, obviously they're top of the group. They won that first game quite convincingly, and if they can get a good result tonight, it could just give them that kind of psychological boost that will push them through the next two games in the Bundesliga.
Obviously, tomorrow night, Bayern Munich head to Manchester, take on Manchester City, and there's a lot of talk about Guardiola's record against English sides in the Champions League. Will that play on the minds of the players, or just Guardiola, or not at all tomorrow night?
I don't think it will play on anyone's mind, to be honest. I mean, I think that's quite an English media, dare I say it, it sounds very snobby of me, but it's a lot of respect for the English media. But there's a lot of, it's a lot more introverted than other countries. I think it thinks about its own football a lot more than other countries do, or certainly it thinks less about the kind of universality of European football than a lot of countries' media do, and I think generally the Guardiola and Bayern will, even if they're aware of Guardiola's record against English teams, it won't play a role in how they approach tonight's game. What will play a role is certainly how Man City have improved and how they showed they're up for the Champions League challenge in the first game, and how they beat Man United, although their away form has been poor. They've had a very, very good start to their home campaign in the Premier League, and Bayern will be aware of all that. I think the really interesting thing away from the two clubs, from the two teams, if you like, is Pellegrini against Guardiola. I think that's probably the only thing that might kind of play on their minds, because they know each other very well. They've played classics against each other, you know. But generally, as Philip Lahm said after the Bayern Schalke game, when someone started mentioning Guardiola, you know, it's all left to Bayern. It's nothing really to do with anything else or Guardiola's history. It's about this team now, and I think that's the mentality they all follow.
City have obviously a very strong midfield. Obviously, Bayern Munich's is just as, and arguably even stronger. Do you see who's likely to change their style of football, do you think, to accommodate the other in this one? Will Bayern kind of flinch first, if you will, being the away side, or will nothing change and it will just see these two sides going at each other?
I think to a certain extent they'll hold true. I think what would be interesting for me is if Yaya Toure particularly has a very, very strong game. That could be interesting in terms of Bayern's defensive midfield, because obviously they've got a lot of injuries. Thiago's not there, Martinez is, I believe, still out. And Schweinsteiger's kind of, he's been on the cusp of fitness, and certainly on in terms of being 100% form-wise, he's not quite been there lately. I mean, he's been good, but he's not not the player that we've seen at other times. And Lahm obviously has been playing defensive midfield, and while he's been perfectly good there, he's not a defensive midfielder yet. I think he's perfectly fine for that role, but he's not used to that position. And I think a player like Touré can really make an impact, because he can be very, very dangerous to the middle. That was how they were saying it under Mancini, and I think if they start applying that pressure very early, if they can keep the ball and allow Touré to make his sort of towering runs through the middle, they could put a lot of pressure on Bayern's defence in the field, and it'd be interesting to see how Guardiola reacts to that. But at the same time, I think Bayern will try and play the normal game, and although they haven't been scoring millions and millions of goals, you have to remember they have been absolutely dominating possession in every single game they've played. So they are flicking well to that part of Guardiola's game, partly because it's not a big change to what they're playing under Hankus. And I think they'll go for that again. I think they're capable of doing that, even worse for it.
Just finally, Kit, obviously Bayer Leverkusen taking on Real Sociedad as well tomorrow. Leverkusen suffered that big, heavy defeat there. Will be itching to bounce back against a Sociedad side that played well but couldn't get the job done against Shakhtar Donetsk.
Yeah, I mean, Leverkusen, I think, will know that they have the quality to get through this group. That's what really bugged them off in the United game, I think. That was what the reaction from the camp was, but it wasn't so much a question of not having the quality to beat teams like United, particularly this United side in the current form that they're in. It was more from the mentality, you know, that those players turned up to Old Trafford, and somehow, whether it was noticeable or not, they did get spooked by the occasion, and they didn't really believe that they could go over 3 points, and that did them in, really. And I think they came away from that game knowing that, and really quite themselves. So yeah, tonight's a big chance to prove that they're up there with the English and Spanish teams, and they can beat them. And they said, yeah, I can't remember who it was who said today, but someone said, we know Sociedad aren't Barcelona, but at the same time they are a Spanish team. They're a big team up there, and they're kind of from one of those big leagues where, because of the team, Leverkusen want to compete and show it on the same level as. So it's a big chance for Leverkusen to prove that.
Was it inexperience, or was it I guess the occasion, or a bit of the same really that forced Leverkusen's poor showing at Old Trafford?
I think partly it was an experience. I mean, there's a fair few players like Son, for example, who never played Champions League football, and a few players who have certainly never really had any serious experience of it. And even I think the more experienced players, you look at players like Rosas and those kind of players, he looks to sort of kind of lead the team in sort of psychological problems like that. There, even those players have never really had any experience of anything but losing to clubs like Manchester United, and so they can't really say, you know, okay, we're going to drive the team forward now. That was always the problem that people said about Bayern before they won the Champions League, that even the kind of really experienced leading players had never won a major trophy, and that caused them problems. And I think at Old Trafford.
Kit, we are going to have to leave it there, my friend. I think we're just losing you on the line as well. So we will let you go and get off to watch a bit of Zenit against Austria Vienna. We appreciate you taking the time, mate, to join us today on World Football Daily. And we look up to catching up with you very soon indeed. Enjoy your time in Germany, man.
Thanks very much.
Kit Holden there joining us here on World Football Daily, talking all things German football. Slight apologies there for the drop in sound quality slightly there. Big thanks to Kit, though, for giving us a lowdown to three of the four games. Of course, Dortmund taking on Marseille tonight as well. We chat with Ian Holyman a little bit about that one earlier, so we thought we'd get stuck into a bit of City Bayern, and of course...